Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, Western producer-reporter Jeremy Symes fills us in on the wind damage recent storms inflicted on Alberta farmers and ranchers.
Everyone was just so amazed that winds could be so powerful.
Jennifer Blair of Alberta Farmer Express talks about tough measures taken to try and control the spread of clubroot in canola.
Ultimately, if clubroot gets to be more severe, producers might lose that crop entirely.
And Glacier Farm Media's Bruce Burnett reveals his latest market insights.
I think there are a couple of negatives for the loonie here that are coming up, and that is going to be positive, I think, for agricultural prices here on the prairies.
All on Between the Rows with this week's host, Ed White.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Almost nobody is as vulnerable to the environment and the weather as the farmer. It's not just crops that can be hit by bad weather. Farmers and their animals can be caught in the middle of weather events, and that was shown to be horrifyingly true on and around October 17th when a powerful windstorm swept across the prairies. One farmer died. A number of others were injured. Hundreds of animals were killed. Rural communities were shocked, and some are in mourning. Jeremy Symes, the Western Producers Edmonton reporter, joins us now to describe the situation and what he has seen. Hello, Jeremy, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hey, Ed.
Jeremy, can you sum up for us what damage the storm caused to farmers?
Yeah, sure. So this storm was immensely damaging, particularly in southern Saskatchewan and southern Alberta here. In the Burisol area, which is southwest Saskatchewan, and it just straddles the border there, 75,000 acres were burned up. In Tompkins, which is southeast of that, 10,000 acres were affected. And then in Coleman here, which is near the Crow's Nest Pass in southwestern Alberta, we had 262 acres burned up. Now, with all of this, we lost one rancher, James Hargrave. He died on his way to fight the Burisol fire. He was driving a water tanker truck. That rolled over and he died of his injuries there. We have a father and son duo, Ron and Evan Wedrick. Now, they are pretty badly injured. They are from Tompkins and they were fighting the fire on their land. And so we have this human loss of life and we have injuries. There's been reports that at least 400 cattle in the Burisol area died due to this fire here. Buildings were affected. Grain bins actually on social media were posted. You could see them rolling across Highway 2. And up north near me in the Wainwright area, we saw a train derail and fall off the Fabian Trestle Bridge there. Some cars were plummeting 60 meters down and crashing. And then in Huxley, which is just south of that, we saw a 67-car train derail. So we're seeing these super powerful winds take a toll, some going upwards of 120 kilometers an hour, which in some cases is as fast as hurricane speeds, the low-level Category 1. So very, very powerful.
I believe you went out to the Wainwright train, I guess, derailment or plunging off of that trestle bridge. What did you see? Can you tell us a bit about the scene and what you heard from people who were there?
Yeah, sure. So I drove up to the trestle bridge, and when I got there, the scene was just this massive wreck. I was there with a bunch of other people there, and everyone was just so amazed that winds could be so powerful to push this train off. At least parts of it, the front half fell, plummeting 60 meters, like I said, and crashing. And then the back bit kind of rolled over into the ditch there. But again, CN told me this was due to the winds, which is quite impressive. So when I got there, there were lots of crews working. They were fixing the bridge. They were using bobcats to drag the cars on the bottom there and disassemble and get those out of the way. From what I understand, that line was closed for a couple of days. They got it back and running on October 21st, but yeah, it was quite the sight.
And I imagine there are a lot of very upset cattle producers who've had to put animals down and dispose of badly damaged livestock.
Yeah, lots have had to put their cattle down. Like I said earlier, there was 400 that, you know, were affected, some burned up, and obviously they had to do that. And, you know, it's one of those losses that just really, really affects ranchers, and they were feeling it for sure.
How are farm communities trying to fix all the damage?
So right now what we're seeing is a lot of neighbors helping neighbors, especially in the areas, you know, rebuild fences, you know, help get buildings back and do assessing together. What we've seen, or what I've seen, is in the case where Ron and Evan Wedrick, that's the father and son who were severely injured, their neighbor is actually helping take over their cattle operation while they're in hospital. And we're also seeing a lot of farmers and these families reach out online through GoFundMe, which is an online donation site, asking the public to help them kind of recoup. Some people are worried they're going to have to cease operations because it's been so damaging, and so they need some funds to stay afloat. But other than that, that's what we're seeing.
Some people hearing this might want to help in some way. What are ways people can find out how they can help some of these people that have been disrupted by this?
Right. So like I mentioned earlier, the GoFundMe pages might be helpful, especially for those who are not in that area and are outside and they want to help out and they're seeing all of this. So what they can do is go to GoFundMe.com, and you can search there, Alberta Fire, Saskatchewan Fire, and you can see a lot of these personal stories pop up, and you can contact those people to see how you might be able to help them there. There's also a community benefit for Ron and Evan Wedrick, and you can contact their person on GoFundMe to see how you can get involved with that. On our website at producer.com, we have some GoFundMe links as well to James Hargrave. That's the man who died of his injuries when that water truck rolled over. And so you can best help out that way if you're particularly not in these areas.
It's a pretty tragic situation all around. Thanks very much for telling us about it today, Jeremy.
Yeah, no problem. It's very tragic.
Jeremy Symes is the Edmonton reporter with the Western Producer. You can find more of his work and a lot more about the windstorm at producer.com. Coming up in a bit, Glacier Farm Media's Director of Markets and Weather, Bruce Burnett, takes a look at the Looney, U.S. late harvest weather, and South American spring conditions. This is Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Clubroot is a slow-moving crop plague, and it's a curse for canola growers. After first appearing in Alberta in 2003, it has spread across the prairies. Agronomists have always called for a 1-in-3-year or a 1-in-4-year rotation, but many farmers have not followed their advice. However, some powerful players in Alberta are demanding lawn rotations for farmers who get infested, and they have the legal power to impose their will. Jennifer Blair of Alberta Farmer joins us now to talk about this issue. Hello, Jennifer, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jennifer, what's happening in some counties if a farmer's land gets infested with clubroot?
Well, most counties in Alberta have some form of policy and procedure for managing clubroot, but some of those counties are a little more stringent than others. So counties might try to educate the farmer or recommend management strategies, and in extreme cases, farmers could be barred from growing canola for up to 5 years.
What happens if a farmer won't listen to their instructions?
Well, under Alberta's Agricultural Pests Act, the county could spray down any canola on an infested field.
Do they really have this power, and would they ever actually do that?
Yeah, they do, actually. In most cases, it doesn't get to that point, but there was a case earlier this year where a farmer didn't comply with their notice and then had 2 quarters of canola sprayed down.
That's a bunch of money.
Yeah, I think producers know how much it costs to seed 2 quarters and to have all of that sprayed down. I mean, that's their time and money out the window for the year.
And how is this approach working?
Well, the Canola Council of Canada has seen some anecdotal and statistical evidence that counties with stricter policies and better enforcement do have less severe rates of infestation. So, you know, I think it is working.
And how widespread is it? Is every county doing it or some of them doing it? What's the uptake of this kind of an approach?
I don't think that most counties get to that quite of an extreme approach. You know, I think they start out with educating the farmer and working closely with the farmer. So it really is those extreme cases where they have that zero tolerance approach.
And are the ones who are doing it, are they happy with it? Are they feeling that this has been a good direction for them to go with people that refuse to, sort of quarantine their lands after they have an infestation?
Well, I don't really think that anybody wants to see canola sprayed down, you know, not the county and certainly not the farmer. But, you know, counties really do have to look out for the greater good. So ultimately, they'd like to work with farmers, but if it comes to a point where they can't work with a farmer, they do have to take those extreme measures.
And what are other farmers and agronomists saying about this approach so far?
Well, for the most part, I think these policies are quite in line with management recommendations from agronomists and the Canola Council. You know, extend your rotation, grow resistant varieties, sanitize your equipment. So I think for the most part, agronomists can be in support of that. You know, obviously farmers don't want to see their crops sprayed under, but I think as long as they're following the notice from the county and trying to work with the county, you know, they're not going to get to that extreme point.
Now, can a farmer just hide club root if they discover it in a field, or is it going to get found out somehow?
Well, a lot of counties actually test every single canola field, you know, in their municipality. But ultimately, that's probably the last thing that farmers want to do, as tempting as it might be. The only real way to beat club root is to manage it effectively, and counties are ultimately there to work with producers and support them in managing the disease. So I think it's better for producers to work with their counties rather than against them.
Now, for farmers who are stuck in the situation of having some infested fields and either being ordered to not grow canola for a number of years or just choosing to do that to be safe and to try to not spread it, what are their main crop options?
Well, I think in Alberta, you know, you've obviously got wheat, barley, any of the pulse crops, anything that will really extend your rotation out to that four or 5 years. You know, we do have a lot of cropping options in Alberta, and while they might not be as reliably profitable as canola, you know, there are a lot of options for producers out there.
I think a lot of guys get their main profits, their best margins from canola. Is that why people have been pushing it so tight in recent years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, producers do have to think about cash flow with the cost of land here and the cost of equipment. So it's completely understandable that producers are still pushing these rotations. I mean, it still pays to push those rotations. But ultimately, you know, if club root gets to be more severe, producers might lose that crop entirely. So, you know, they do have to really think to the future and really think, what would they do if they lost canola completely?
And I expect the local politicians with these counties, a lot of them would be farmers themselves, wouldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing about, you know, rural municipalities. So many of these guys, you know, are farmers, and they really do just want to maintain the crop and maintain the cropland for the future. They want to do the best that they can for everybody living in the municipality. And, you know, they don't want to harm one farmer for the greater good, but if that's what it comes down to, you know, they've shown that they're willing to take that.
Well, thanks very much for joining us today, Jennifer.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Jennifer Blair is a reporter with Alberta Farmer, and you can find more of her work at albertafarmerexpress.ca. This is Between the Rows. I'm your host, Ed White. Joining us now to talk about what's going on in the markets is Bruce Burnett, Glacier Farm Media's Director of Markets and Weather Information. Hello, Bruce, and welcome to the show.
Hi.
The loonie keeps taking us for a ride. It recently slipped beneath the 80-cent mark. Where do you see it going, Bruce, and what's behind its recent gyrations?
Well, certainly I think everybody was surprised at how strong the loonie became in midsummer when we really got a number of positive economic reports followed by the Bank of Canada raising interest rates. So this certainly came as a concern here for those of us in the agricultural markets because that does have a tendency to depress our prices. What we've seen lately is the dollar has eased off. It peaked in that 81 to 82 cent range, and now we're down into the 78, 79 cent range. And I think we're probably going to weaken even further. This week, we're going to see a report from the Government of Canada on the budgetary situation. That probably is going to be quite rosy. So it could provide a little bit of support, but longer term here, I don't think that there's a lot supporting the loonie. First of all, it looks as if the economy is going to slow down quite a bit in the third and fourth quarters of this year, as well as into early next year, because as the economy improves, the comparables between quarters becomes harder and harder. In other words, as you grow faster, it becomes more and more difficult to keep that growth up. And the second part about this is, I think, the uncertainty around the NAFTA negotiations. I think certainly in the January through March timeframe, if the agreement is not consummated, or even if there are concerns that it will be, that we'll start to see the loonie be pressured because of the natural problems that we would have under a non-NAFTA type of an environment. So I think there are a couple of negatives for the loonie here that are coming up, and that is going to be positive, I think, for agricultural prices here on the prairies.
Most of Canada's crops are off the field now, but there's still lots out in the U.S. What's going on down there, and how is that affecting the markets?
Well, certainly we've seen some harvest delays, much like the same situation that we had, not this crop harvest, but the past crop harvest, where there were a frequent number of rains. The crops seemed to not dry down very well. So we've seen delays both in the corn and the soybean harvest. This week from the USDA, we saw the soybean harvest certainly picked up. But on the corn side, they're still dramatically behind. And especially in areas of the Corn Belt that you don't want to see them behind, the Northern Plains, in other words, North Dakota, parts of Minnesota, South Dakota, Northern Iowa, are all lagging significantly from normal progress. There's a couple of things going on here. One thing is that they're waiting for the crops to dry down because they don't want to pay drying charges at the elevator for their corn. And secondarily, they're focusing rightly on the soybeans, which right now are certainly a much more valuable crop. And you could get significant losses in soybeans at this time of year. Corn, not so much. Longer term, these harvest delays don't usually mean too much unless you don't get the harvest completed. There's still plenty of time to finish the harvest. It would be just in those northern areas if we were to see a snowstorm or something move through that would cause some significant concerns for the markets. So really, I don't think that this is going to have a longer term impact, but it's something the market's very concerned with right now and probably has been behind some of the rise that we've seen just recently in the corn market, at least anyway.
And turning our attention way further south, South America is at the opposite end of the crop year. What's going on down there right now?
Well, we have a couple of things going on there. First of all, the farmers are planting their corn and soybean crops, mostly their soybean crops right now. And for the most part, things are going along reasonably well. The Brazilian plantings have been a little bit behind normal, which is what everybody's getting concerned about, because the northern growing areas were too dry at the start. We've seen some rains through that region, so the progress is starting along here. I think it's important to emphasize that the concern that I have in that region is not about the soybean crop. They can still plant the soybean crop many months from now if they wanted to. It's about the follow-up crop that they plant afterwards, and that would be the corn crop. So the earlier they get the soybeans in, the more likely they're going to have decent corn yields in that region. But it doesn't necessarily impact the soybeans. The area is going to increase in Brazil this year, probably 1% to 3%, something like that. So we should, with good growing conditions, see even more output from that region. Argentina is a bit of a different animal in terms of what they're looking at this year. They're actually going to increase their corn acreage versus their soybean acreage. And a couple of things going on. The first thing is that the Argentinian rotation on soybeans is very heavily weighted towards that crop. And farmers now, given the opportunities without the export taxes on corn, are starting to maybe even that rotation out a bit. So we're going to see a little bit more corn acreage in the Argentina, and maybe not quite as much in terms of soybeans. So all told, that probably just evens out for South American production. Probably looking at, given good weather this growing season, a fairly similar crop to last year on the soybean side, and maybe a slightly downward push on the corn side because of the concerns about the late harvest or the late planting in Brazil later on down the line here.
Wheat remains the dog of the big crops. Why can't it crawl out of the basement?
The main reason is because we are still chewing through the supplies that we've had over the past number of years. And so we're looking at very large stock levels. This year's production has exceeded a lot of people's expectations. Despite lower area in parts of the world, we're still producing a similar amount of wheat. The big surprise this year, obviously, has been the Russian production this year, a new record, and certainly it's going to take some time for that crop to disperse out into the international channels. And we're starting to see the support for the Russian prices here. Recent Egyptian tenders have gone up, partially because of Egyptian rejection of some cargoes, but also because the base price in Russia has increased a bit as well. So you're looking at some improvements in the price in Russia there. That should help support the market, but there's no real impetus for the market to go higher unless we get some concrete news about declining wheat production somewhere significant, especially. So I don't think that we're going to be in for a problem here or a wheat rally here until we see some concerns, let's say, for the winter wheat crop. The main impact is going to be actually in the winter wheat plantings here in parts of the world, especially in North America. Look for another drop on an already historical low area in the U.S. for the upcoming winter wheat crop.
Yeah, we just seem such a perennial disappointment at this time of year for a couple of years now.
Yes, it has been. I think, again, for Canadian farmers, spring wheat farmers, the outlook's a little bit more positive. We're looking at very good demand for spring wheat, even in the U.S. spring wheat. Right now, in the last USDA export inspections, we saw that about 92% of the West Coast movement is now soybeans. So soybeans are now limiting the capacity for the U.S. to export off the West Coast. So that should be good for Canadian demand as well. So there are a few positive factors here, but nothing that'll move wheat up a couple dollars a bushel.
And canola has been hanging around the $500 a ton mark for a long time, at least in the futures markets. Is there any sign of direction for that crop, either up or down? Is there anywhere that it seems to want to go?
Right now, canola, as well as soybeans, are in an upward channel in the futures market. And again, for canola itself, we produced a reasonably large crop, considering the growing season that we've had. But demand has been very, very strong for canola, so we're going to be well-balanced at the end of the year. So that should mean prices will increase as we go forward in this marketing year. As well, that weaker Canadian dollar that I spoke about earlier probably is going to give us some support as well. So between those two factors, I do think that we're going to move up. Unless we get into a problem in Brazilian soybeans or something of that magnitude, really, I think we're just going to be inching higher a bit with maybe a high on the futures of around $520, $525 per ton.
Yeah, it's a lot better than the float around 490 support around there from what I can remember.
Yes, that's right. And certainly a lot better than what we were looking at even a month ago.
Well, thanks very much for joining us today, Bruce.
Thanks.
Bruce Burnett is Director of Glacier Farm Media's Markets and Weather Information. That's it for this week on Between the Rows. I'm Ed White. We'll be back next week.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.